I haven't seen Mountain Biking Girl again. I only bring that up, because I said I would update you guys on that. I know you really care about my tail-chasing activities. You're all sitting around going, I wonder how the Great One's tail-chasing activities are going. I have a good story to tell, but we're not telling it in this episode. This episode, we're going to talk about a book that I mentioned. I think I mentioned it. If I didn't, I'm going to mention it now. It's actually not by Aaron Clary. You can scream and shout with all your might. Oh, you can scream, shout, whine, cry, snivel, piss, and moan. Dig in your heels and hold on tight. And shove your opinion up your ass that way Obama's cock has something to keep it company. Don't forget, the ever-present, the most likely, the third possibility. You are wrong, and I am right. That's probably how it's going to go down. Here's a tip for you. Don't, if you have a spiderweb cradle microphone holder, don't leave the microphone in it for an extended period of time. It'll wear out the elastic, stretch it, and you'll have to replace it. This is Stating the Obvious Podcast. It is the weapons platform from which I launch the cruise missile of my intellect that homes in on and destroys stupid motherfucking statists all around the world. Left-wing statist, right-wing statist, Christian statheist, atheist statheist, Muslim statheist, whatever the fuck kind of statheist you are, you will die by coming in contact with this podcast. Because I know you've gone your entire life thinking to yourself, but without the government, who would build roads? How could anybody possibly, without the assistance and the oversight and the wisdom of people like Hussein Obama, how could we possibly create a flat space on the ground? It's so fucking complicated. Oh my God, I need some fucking Obamacare. God at CYNLIBSOC.com. That is the email address. Dog spelled backwards. God, G-O-T, if you want to send us hate mail, naked pictures, pictures of you if you're a volleyball chick, all about volleyball chicks. In the control room over there is the lovely and adorable Randy. We're on the internets at CYNLIBSOC.com. On the Twitterverse, CYNLIBSOC. Today is 30th of June, wrapping up Worthless Degree Awareness Month. Speaking of Aaron Clary, he started Worthless Degree Awareness Month 2 years ago, if I remember correctly. And this is the time of year when I go into restaurants and people with liberal arts degrees carry food to my table and ask me if I would like dessert or if I'm ready for my check. Okay, I got a lot to cover. I want to get all this in one podcast, so no more fucking around. This is a book. It's this thing. It's printed on paper for those of you who are kids. And yes, it does have pictures. It's called The D-Textbook, the stuff you didn't know about the stuff you thought you knew. And this is apparently written by some people who also did a book called You Might Be a Zombie and Other Bad News, which I'm going to take a look for and see if I can find it. Now, this is the one flaw with this book. Is that they don't present any sources for their material. And I rather wish they would have, so that one could investigate these things in depth, because it's easy to just say shit without backing it up. So this book essentially is a book about things you think you know that you didn't really know. And I knew already probably about 50% of what was in here. There are some stuff I didn't know, and there's a couple of things that I'm not sure about. But the point is, it's a good book. You'll learn some shit you didn't know, like, for example, that the thing you think is the Confederate flag is not actually the Confederate flag. I knew that, of course, being a Southerner and not being completely ignorant of history, but you don't know that. And yes, you do have to bake a cake in the shape and form and size and color and configuration of a Confederate flag, regardless of how you feel. Thank you, political correctness. Shut the fuck up. All right, let us begin. I want to read some stuff out of this book. And the beauty of this book is that it confirms so much of what I've said over the years. confirms so much of why democracy is a failure. It confirms so much of why you're an idiot. It confirms so much of why you should not be making choices for other people, nor should you be choosing people to make choices for other people. Without any further whining, let us begin the reading from the book, the D textbook. The myth, Hitler was a charismatic genius whom we barely stopped from taking over the globe. In some places of this book, I'm going to leave out the flavor text. It has a lot of flavor text for humorous effect. It's a very enjoyable book to read. The truth. Hitler was just a PR-savvy, self-obsessed douchebag who knew how to manipulate the media and his public image. Now, as I read this, substitute the word Obama for Hitler. All this Hitler talk is getting a little heavy for us. Let's take a trip to the present. You know those awful modern celebrities like the Kardashians and Paris Hilton who become famous even though they have no discernible skills? In most cases, the reason these people are famous is because they are more image conscious and shrewd about their image than people with actual talent. Does that remind you of any presidents you know? And believe, again, you don't just have to substitute Obama's name here. Substitute the name of essentially any politician. Their number one skill is a willingness to do ridiculously vain and self-obsessed things that most people would be too ashamed to do. You now understand Hitler's rise to power. For instance, every one of those public speeches where it seemed he might be spontaneous, spontaneously take a bite out of the podium, all an act. There was nothing spontaneous or passionate about them. Hitler would hire a private photographer, Heinrich Hoffmann, to take pictures of him while he practiced his speeches. Hitler would then run through his awful rants and audition a variety of poses, hand gestures, and bizarre expressions, all while Hoffmann snapped pictures. Hitler would then review the images and decide whether to include a given gesture in his speech. Now, of course, the Messiah simply has a teleprompter and an army of speechwriters, but nonetheless, you people also attribute to him this magnetic charisma that makes him just such a wonderful person that you'll just believe anything he says, even though his speeches are essentially nothing but a bunch of words that don't have any actual meaning. Need I remind you, yet again, this is the man who said that we cannot continue to rely only on our military for a strong defense. We have to have a national security defense force that is just as powerful, just as strong, and just as well funded. The man, and I use the term man loosely, has been president for 6 fucking years, and to this day, I have still not met a single Obama voter who can explain to me what the fuck that phrase means. No fucking idea. It's just words that mean nothing. They're just words, and there's nothing there. Hitler would also set up special photo shoots with Hoffmann. There are a number of images of Hitler posing in different outfits and in different locations, as seen in figure 315, in which he's captured looking like the shittiest American Eagle model in Germany. And again, the White House has control over photos of the president. You publish remember when the White House put out that photo of the president and said, you'd better not Photoshop this picture? Oh, man. That picture and others like it were banned by Hitler because it looked ridiculous. Hitler knew that image was everything. Does that remind you of Obama? He wasn't going to let any silly pictures surface, and he wasn't going to step out in front of the public without practicing his tough guy face a few hundred times. He was a showman and a shrewdly manipulative narcissist, but he wasn't the spontaneous, passionate man possessed that historians and filmmakers would lead you to believe. In fact, those impassioned speeches and evil prep rallies that seemed to whip all of Germany into a murder lust weren't even all that effective. Hitler's approval rating rarely broke 40%, and that's despite murdering anyone who could be considered his competition. Now, again, I'm not really sure how you know what Hitler's approval rating was, but sure, whatever. Not saying they don't have opinion polls from Nazi Germany asking people, what's your approval rating, Hitler? I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I'd love to see sources. But still, it's irrelevant. Hitler's real strength lay in his ability to surround himself with people much smarter than he was. Can you say George W. Bush? As I've said many times in the past, George Bush was an idiot, but he was smart enough to surround himself with people who were smarter than he was. I'm not saying they were smart people. Well, no, they were smart people. I'm not saying they were good people. I'm saying they were smart people. They were smart enough to get a mental retard. Yeah, again, at least Obama has some kind of charisma. He's not this great public speaker that you morons think he is. I mean, listen to him talk. And, right, he's not a great public speaker. He doesn't talk pretty, which is one of the attributes you people have assigned to him in your process of making him into a demigod. George Bush was not charismatic. He was not a good speaker. He had nothing going on. And yet he was smart enough to surround himself with people smart enough to get him elected president 2 times. Germany's successful invasion of France, for example, had very little to do with Hitler, probably because he was too busy managing the Battle of Dunkirk, where 300,000 Allies escaped, and the Battle of Britain, Germany's first major defeat in the war. The Nazis were pretty damn effective, as long as that pesky Hitler wasn't getting involved. And yeah, this is fairly common knowledge. I've talked about this before, as have countless other military historians who have pointed out that many of the World War II German generals, military commanders, were brilliant motherfuckers, and had Hitler not got in the fucking way, Germany, you know, of course, had Hitler, quote-unquote, not gotten in the way, the war may have never started. But if Hitler would have started the war, started taking land, and then just sort of got the fuck out of the way, the German generals probably would have taken France and Poland and a few other countries, and they would have been incredibly victorious, and they would have fucking stopped. I'm pretty sure the German generals in high command would not have invaded North Africa. They probably would not have attempted to invade England, and I can guarantee you 100%, suck your dick if I'm wrong, if we could go back in time and do an opinion poll of the German military command, guarantee there was pretty much almost none of them except the major, major ass kissers who thought that invading the Soviet Union was a good idea. Wait, was it the Soviet Union then or was it Russia? No, it was the Soviet Union. Yeah. Most of them with any fucking brains would have told you invading Russia, bad fucking idea. As this book points out later, and I don't think I have this slated to read, but like it or not, the thing that caused Germany to lose the war was not the United States or any of that or anything we did. It was pretty much the fucking Soviet Union. It was when Hitler tried to invade the Soviet Union that he got his ass officially and royally handed to him. And yada, yada, yada. So anyhow, yes, the German military commanders were pretty bright motherfuckers. Fortunately for everyone on the world, fortunately for everybody who did not want to live under Adolf Hitler's rule, Adolf Hitler was a moron, and he tried to micromanage the war. Some people think that's a bad thing. As I've said before, it's a good thing, because had he not micromanaged the war, the Nazi Party might still be in power in some parts of Europe. So to recap, despite his approval rating, he managed to get a great deal of Germany to agree to some spectacularly bad ideas because they were in an extremely rough spot. Like Obamacare, for example. And despite being a tactical doofus, the Nazis ran shit all over Europe thanks to some favorable conditions and slow responses from other world powers. Hitler got a lot done by being terrible at everything. Does that remind you of Bush and Obama? Bailing out corporations, starting wars, deploying drones, bombing countries, Obamacare, the fucking, what do you call that thing that happened with Bush? The Spying on Americans Act, the Patriot Act, right? two incompetent motherfuckers who probably, I mean, you could probably put Obama and Bush together in the bathroom, give them an entire pack, like 48 rolls of toilet paper. I bet between the two of them, they could not wipe their asses. And look at how much fucking destruction and damage they have done to other humans on the planet by dropping bombs on them and killing them, and our freedoms. Hitler got a lot done by being terrible at everything. It's useful to think of him as an evil Forrest Gump, stumbling his way ass backward from one success into another over and over for reasons that have less to do with things like skill and charisma and more to do with the statistical inevitability that some stupid asshole will get extremely ridiculous lucky once every century. Also, we should probably point out that Hitler slept through most of the Allies' storming of Normandy and never woke up before noon. He also took 28 different medications to treat his chronic flatulence, one of which is now known to have been essentially meth. This both explains why he was always flipping out like a lunatic behind the scenes and suggests that those flip-outs were probably punctuated by spurts of unintended flatulence. Oh yeah, and then there's right here, Guy Fawkes was not an anarchist, which, no, we knew that. The myth, aside from the A within a circle scrawled in the middle of every bathroom on Earth, school bathroom on Earth, the 17th century revolutionary Guy Fawkes is probably the most prominent symbol of anarchy. This is because he attempted to blow up Parliament in order to destabilize the British government. The truth! He was blowing up Parliament because he thought it was too liberal. The anarchist may be right that Fox was the only person ever to enter Parliament with honest intentions. They've forgotten what those intentions were. Fox wasn't trying to destroy an evil theocracy, he was trying to install one. Fox was a fighter for Spain and the Catholic Church. His goal was to end the slightly more egalitarian Protestant Revolution in England by restoring Catholic domination. If the gunpowder plot had actually succeeded and Fox had his way, Britain wouldn't have looked like a punk rock album cover. It would have looked more like an Osmond Family album cover if the Osmonds stood around smoking piles of blood and rubble. Yes. There's also an interesting thing over here. I'm not going to read this one. Machiavelli, apparently, they're making the claim that the prince, by the way, if it sounds weird while I'm recording this podcast, like right now, so I'm sitting on my Fitball and I'm bouncing up and down, which is probably really fucking up the audio, which is why Randy's giving me dirty looks. I will try to refrain from bouncing, but if you hear my voice start going like this throughout the podcast, it's because I'm bouncing on the ball. On the ball. Because I am on the ball. Because I am an anarcho-capitalist and you're a motherfucking statist. And you can suck my balls. Anyhow, apparently these people are claiming that The Prince by Machiavelli was actually written as a satirical piece and that it was dedicated to the person it was dedicated to. Who was it? The Medici? I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. Whoever. That Machiavelli wrote this and dedicated it to them because he was trying to ruin their reputation. I don't know if this is true or not, but, I mean, it sounds perfectly plausible, and if it is, in fact, satire, it's a pretty brilliant piece of satire. Which, of course, is the mark of truly good satire, right? I mean, the best satire out there, as we all know, is when you read something, you see something, whatever, and you don't know for sure if it's satire or not. Well, The Prince, if it is in fact satire, might be the greatest chunk of satire ever written. Let us jump ahead now. Page 118. Fingers. Come on, fingers. What's on 118? Oh, the Mild West. So remember, if we lived in an anarcho-capitalist society, it would be like the Wild West, right? Where everybody was running around killing and murdering each other. There'd be gunfights in the streets. The most murders any Western town saw during any 1 year of the Wild West historical period was, wait for it, five. Five murders, 1 year. That's one Deadwood episode. In 1881, a particular town in Arizona saw its most violent year ever. The town? Tombstone. The violence in question? The famed shootout at the OK Corral. The death toll? 3. Woo! Yes, it would be just like the Wild West, where everybody was constantly gunning other people down. Right? In fact, they didn't even have time to go to the saloons and get drunk and purchase prostitutes. They were so busy shooting each other. And of course, they didn't actually purchase the prostitutes. They just raped them because that's what they... And then, of course, they burned down the town. Because if there were no government, everyone would just run down the street murdering other people. Wait, how would there be streets? Without the government, nobody could make a flat place on the ground. There would be no streets to run down so that you could shoot other people and rape their women and then burn down their homes. Oh, man. Oh, this is good. Page 126. Now, this is why. Now we begin to get into why. Because I went through my phase. Again, those of you who have listened to this podcast for a while know, as I've said, I was a right-wing minarchist. I was at one time what you could have called a constitutionalist. Also, if we just go back to the Constitution and the Founding Fathers and yada, yada, yada. Right, the way you people messiahize Obama or messiahize Bush or messiahize Hillary Clinton, I used to do something pretty similar with the Founding Fathers. I think maybe many anarchists have gone through that phase, and then we grew up and got over it. And I'm not, I also don't want to say that the Founding Fathers have nothing of value, right? You read stuff by Jefferson and Adams and all this stuff. It's just like Obama. Sometimes he says things that are good. He's like, if Obama comes out and says, boy, all right, that's actually kind of a stretch. Fuck. What could Obama say? All right, never mind. But some of the Founding Fathers said things that were good, like limited government. Well, all right, that's not as a good idea as anarcho-capitalism, but it's a good idea. Okay, so I'm saying it's not that like they have no value at all in reading their writings and discussing what they thought and what they said. It's just you have to remember that, again, you can say the shit all you want. We have to judge them also by what they did, which of course was give us the democracy we live in now, where 20% of the population can elect Obama and fuck the rest of us into having to purchase Obamacare. Anyhow, Thomas Jefferson, basically Rain Man, the myth. Thomas Jefferson wrote the Declaration of Independence and as a result invented democracy, America, and freedom. The truth. Picture the most nervous and awkward kid in your middle school. The kid who was so afraid of public speaking, whenever he had to give a presentation in front of the class, he started shaking and stress farted so bad the walls quaked. The kid who developed a nervous stutter whenever a small crowd gathered to listen to him. The kid who would rather cry and wet himself than stand in front of his friends and deliver a speech, that was Thomas Jefferson for his entire life. Jefferson was a terrible public speaker, neither charismatic nor eloquent, and would collapse into a sweaty pile of stage fright the instant he saw a microphone or whatever it was that people stood behind when speaking during the 1700s. Throughout Jefferson's presidency, he gave only 2 speeches, his inaugurations, and he adopted the practice of just writing and mailing the State of the Union addresses to Congress. Boy, I would love it if presidents only gave 1 speech through their entire term. See, that would be great. There's something Thomas Jefferson gave us that would be wonderful to implement. So he's not all bad. Many scholars suggest that Jefferson might have suffered from Asperger syndrome. There's no way to prove that now, but the details do add up. He couldn't make eye contact with people. He would hum and sing to himself constantly, and he repeatedly engaged in specific non-functional routines and rituals, all symptoms of Asperger's. He obsessed over and wrote down every detail he ever observed, whether it was the weather, animal sightings, recipes, or gardening. He left 40,000 pieces of correspondence to his grandson, which is crazy because it means that A, he was so obsessed with record keeping that he actually made 40,000 pieces of correspondence, and B, he actually kept them all throughout his entire life. Obsessive behavior, public shyness, and an inability to connect with other people. It certainly sounds like he was on the spectrum. Now, I just want to point out for one moment that despite being Asperger's syndromed, he still managed to become president. You know, there's this argument, did he write the Declaration or not? I don't give a fuck. I don't know. I wasn't there. You know, it's like, was Shakespeare really Shakespeare? I don't know, and it doesn't fucking matter. Okay, despite having Asperger's, Thomas Jefferson owned a plantation, was president of the United States, was at least there when the Declaration was written, knocked up his slave and got her pregnant, was rich. And yet today, people with Asperger's and ADHD and all these other invented diseases, they can't do a fucking thing. They're just completely fucking helpless. And those of us who are heterosexual white men that work for a living, and the few women who work for a living, and actually we pay the, we have to fucking drag these people through life by fucking giving them privileges and paying our tax money to provide shit for them and being all sensitive to them and all this other shit. How is it that Thomas, back in the, he didn't have no running water. Well, he may have running water. He didn't have electricity. They didn't have automobiles. They didn't have computers. They didn't have fucking smartphones. And yet he managed to do all these things. And he had Asperger's. You're out there. I have ADHD. I need special accommodations. Fuck you. Speaking of handicaps, in addition to sucking at public speaking, he just kind of sucked in a general way, too. He dressed like a child, but a crappy child, or a blind one, or again, one incapable of picking up on social cues. He was laughed at just about everywhere he went as a result of his clothes. His pants were bright red, he wore fur collars, he mixed and matched incompatible styles, and dressed like an uncool person before it was cool, and he did it on purpose. You know, kind of like today, where you walk around with your underwear sticking out. Let's pick 126. Let's see. JFK, when he said, you know, I am a Berliner. Actually, I'm a jelly-filled donut. No, he really didn't. Oh, yeah, this one. Thomas Paine. Adopted mascot of modern libertarians, adopted mascot of Republicans who are calling themselves libertarians. But again, I don't expect the writers of this book to understand anarcho-capitalism. It's fine, we know what they're saying. Huge fan of taxes. Myth. Thomas Paine, the founding father, best known for his Revolutionary War tract Common Sense, has found a new relevance in modern-day politics and pundits with the Tea Party movement. The truth. Paine is also responsible for these ideas. Quote, pay as a remission of taxes to every poor family out of the surplus taxes and in room of poor rates, £4 a year for every child under 14 years of age. It's from Rights of Man. Quote, it is painful to see old age working itself to death in what are called civilized countries for daily bread. Pay to every such person of the age of 50 years, the sum of £6 per annum out of the surplus taxes and £10 per annum during life after age of 60. This support, as has already remarked, is not of the nature of a charity, but of a right, from Rights of Man. Which, as the book authors point out, that sounds a lot like Social Security. Quote, there could be no such thing as landed property originally. Man did not make the earth, and though he has a natural right to occupy it, he has no right to locate as his property in perpetuity. Bleh. He has no right to locate as his property in perpetuity any part of it. From Agrarian Justice. And this one. Create a national fund out of which there shall be paid to every person when arrived at the age of 21 years the sum of £15 sterling as a compensation in part for the loss of his or her natural inheritance by the introduction of the system of landed property. That is from Agrarian Justice as well. And again, this is why I say reading the Founding Fathers can be very enlightening, interesting discussion, but they're not these fucking anarcho-capitalist gods. They're not even right-wing Republican libertarian like Glenn Beck, Julie Berensky gods, Ron Paul gods. They're not even at that level. I mean, this is Thomas Paine talking about let's have taxes and give the money to old people in the form of Social Security. They're not, you know, again, with people, you always cherry pick everything. The same thing, presidents, just anybody. Look, people who hate Ronald Reagan, cherry pick his fuck ups. People who love Ronald Reagan, cherry pick his successes. People who love Obama, cherry pick his successes. People who hate Obama, cherry pick his failures. Until you're able to make the leap to understanding that all humans, from Adolf Hitler to your Messiah, Hussein Obama, all humans have good qualities and bad qualities. All humans have done beautiful, wonderful things and really stupid, fucked up, evil things. This is why anarcho-capitalism says if you don't have a centralized government, if you don't have a a government people have to obey by force. That's like brain cramping. If you don't have a government, a system that can force people to obey it through the use of force, the threat of violence, then people can do stupid shit, but it's really hard for one person doing something stupid to affect a huge number of people. Unlike now, where Obama does one stupid thing and we have Obamacare. Obama says one stupid thing and you got 12 dead people because they were going to a wedding but they got killed by a flying robot. Now this one's for the NAACP, especially with all the Confederate flag stuff lately. Rosa Parks, carefully chosen spokesperson for a PR-savvy civil rights movement. The myth. You don't have to be a history major. This falls in the category of stuff I already knew before reading this book, but I know you wouldn't believe me. You don't have to be a history major to recognize Rosa Parks as the snowflake that started an avalanche of progress. The truth. Not only was Parks not the first African American to refuse to yield her seat to a white man, she wasn't even the first in her own town. There was Claudette Colvin, a 15-year-old girl who took the exact same buses as Rosa Parks and was arrested for refusing to give up her seat 9 months before Parks, as well as the 18-year-old Mary Louise Smith, who'd been arrested 6 weeks before Parks. Parks was deliberately chosen to be the face of the civil rights movement. It turns out that the NAACP wasn't some half-assed organization that found out racism existed after an old lady got arrested. It was a sophisticated, media-savvy organization looking to get attention for its incredibly important cause. The group decided that of the many shit pies they were being forced to eat in the South, that black women being arrested for sitting at the front of the bus was the right mixture of symbolic and non-threatening. So now they had the candidates to consider. Colvin was disqualified for being a pregnant teenager, and Smith wasn't used because her dad was falsely rumored to have a drinking problem. It sounds harsh, but the NAACP leaders knew they couldn't give the white community a single excuse to ignore them. They were playing a game of chess with 1,000 moving pieces, and everything had to go exactly right for them to even make a splash. Rosa Parks may have been the third woman arrested, but she looked like a 19th century schoolmarm who might be carrying a bowl of warm oatmeal in her purse. She was the obvious choice, and the NAACP rode the momentum of that choice and an increasingly sophisticated awareness campaign to national prominence and eventually into history. And they did absolutely none of it by accident. Got some stuff about the Revolutionary War and all sorts of bullshit behind that. Yes. The Civil War was not a The Civil War was not a heroic battle of wits, but a lopsided, disease-ridden hot mess. The myth. The North loved all God's children, red and yellow, black and white. Ask a Southern Civil War enthusiast what the Civil War was really about, and he will probably give you one answer, states' rights. Ask anyone else, and they'll probably give you another answer, slavery. Since Northern states were quicker to free their slaves, they obviously understood the fundamental truth that all men, no matter what color, were created equal. Aw, now that's such a wonderful myth. Lincoln and all those wonderful Yankees who only the year before were happy to import black people from Africa and sell them to Southerners for a profit, why, they all just woke up and suddenly they understood equality. The truth. The North hosted the most violent American race riot in history. In the 1860s, the North needed more soldiers to fight for equality, so Congress established the very first draft. Everyone was required to register, except freed blacks, who weren't yet viewed as citizens. Well, interesting. So, black people are equal to white people, so we're going to have a draft to send people to fight for black people's equality, but black people don't have to register for the draft because they're not actually citizens of the country they live in, but we're all equal. Again, the twisted mind of us, this is right up there with homosexuals should get permission from the government to get married, just like everybody else. No one dares ask the question, why does anybody need permission from the government to get married? No one dares ask the question, if blacks are equal to whites and whites have to sign up for the draft, why don't blacks have to sign up for the drafts? Oh, because they're not citizens yet. Well, wait, so the white people are citizens, but the black people aren't citizens, but black people are equal to white people. I'm so fucking confused. See, statists would just look at this and just like, well, that's patriarchy. I would love for you fucking, any statist out there, explain that to me. Explain to me why you're so fucking proud of that. All right, here we go. Well, by the time the second mandatory draft of Union soldiers was held in July of 1863, the white draftees weren't having it. Angry that their government was giving all the cool privileges to those lucky, recently enslaved, non-citizen black three-fifths people, mobs of white city dwellers expressed their disapproval of the system by hurling rocks, murdering horses, attacking black people, and, holy shit, burning down a children's orphanage. Ah, you northern Yankees, you're so fucking enlightened and tolerant and diverse. You know, we southerners, we could learn a lot from how tolerant and multicultural you fucking nasty Yankee filthy scumbag fuckers are. We could learn so much from you about how to get along with black people. By the end of the four-day riot, at least 11 African Americans had been murdered in lynchings and hundreds more assaulted. Where'd this riot take place? Why, on the streets of Manhattan, of course. It took no fewer than 4,000 federal troops fresh from Gettysburg to subdue the insurrection. New York City's black residents were so terrorized by the riots that by 1865, the black population plunged to its lowest levels in 45 years, before there was such a thing as an abolitionist movement. There's also the story I read one time where there was a Union army was on the run from, not the entire Union army, a component of the Union army was retreating from a component of the Southern army. And back in the day, for those of you who don't know anything about old warfare, you know, again, it wasn't like today where you have helicopters and airplanes and shit. So back in these days, you'd have an army and it's moving along. And then there would be the camp followers, because there's all these people needed to supply things to the army, to cook for it, and nurses and doctors and all these things. And then there would usually be a group of civilians trailing behind them, because again, where the army's going, they need all of these services. The soldiers can't fucking do everything, they have to fight. They, you know, they can't, so they have 24 hours. So anyway, there's all these things. Well, this Union army was retreating, and its followers are behind it. And behind that was this large mass of former slaves who were following the Union army, trying to also escape from the Southern army that was coming behind them. So the Union army goes across a river on the bridge, and their camp followers get across. And then before the black people could get across the bridge, what did the Union army do? Oh, they burned it down. So that the black people that they came to the South to save, because they care so much about equality and social justice and tolerance and diversity and harmony, the black people, they came down there to save. Remember, that's why they burned Atlanta. When Sherman burned Atlanta, he only burned the houses and property of the white people. The property of the black people, they didn't have property. All right, the houses the black people lived in and the gardens the black people got their food from. See, he didn't touch any of that. He only burned the stuff that was the white people's, because he was there to liberate the black people. In Atlanta and all the cities that Sherman burned, no black people suffered any hardships. They had food aplenty, they had a place to live, they had clothing. It was only the white people affected, because white people in the South are all racist. So anyhow, the Union Army just abandons the black people on the other side of the river with the evil Confederates. Because, oh, you fucking Yankees, you care so fucking much about black. Hey, Yankees, if you care so much about black people, explain Detroit. Done with that. Page 150. Let's see, what else have we over here? Oh yeah, stuff about the Cold War. That's pretty funny. H.G. Wells, the War of the Worlds thing. Actually, nobody panicked. And the panic was actually made up by the newspapers, because this was when the radio was first emerging. And just like today, newspapers are terrified of the internet, and so they're trying to discredit the internet as a news source. Well, I mean, not so much anymore. I think we're past that hump, so I misspeak. We're past that hump. But remember when the internet first started happening? Remember how newspapers were shitting themselves? It was the same thing when radio came along. Newspapers pooped themselves, and newspapers made up this thing about everyone freaking out about War of the Worlds as an attempt to make radio look dangerous. The hell? Oh yeah, stuff about masturbation. And yes, it is true that back in the day, women were said to have hysterics, and the cure for it was for a doctor to take a vibrator and masturbate the woman with it. That's totally true. That was the good old days. There's a thing in here about how the good old days aren't really the good old days, which to a point I agree with, to a point I don't agree with. You know, I was listening to Cato Daily Podcast, and they had another one of these episodes where, and right-wingers roll this out all the time, just like left-wingers roll out, you know, the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. Right-wingers always roll out this shit about how, well, yeah, there's poor people, but color TVs are cheaper than ever. And I've ranted about this before, I'm not going to go on too long about it, but it's like, God, you know, yeah, color TVs might be cheaper than ever, but I'm really unclear how that fucking justifies. And again, it's all, these are all statistics and numbers, and you can tweak them in all sorts of different ways. But the fact is that if everybody's so much better off economically, explain to me why you have a worthless college degree, right? Breanne Boland. 3 episodes about, you know, her fucking worthless degree, and she's working part-time as an adjunct. So if everything is so fucking wonderful, and if everything is so fucking cheap and easy to afford the way the Republicans say it is, then why are there all these poor people who can't afford healthcare even with Obamacare, and who are on food stamps? I mean, if everything is so cheap and easy to afford, then why the fuck are there poor people? Explain that to me, you fucking douchebag Republicans. If everything is so cheap, then why are there poor people? Why don't the poor people have cars? And why aren't they buying houses? And why don't they have swimming pools? Well, TVs are cheaper now. That you can buy a color TV now for so little. Who gives a fuck? And Republicans pull this shit out. They do all the fucking time. Color TVs are cheaper than ever. Fuck you! The fuck does that have to do with anything? Can you eat a color TV? If you break your leg, can the fucking color TV set your leg and put a cast on it? Who gives a fuck? Goddamn fucking Republicans. Oh, shit. All right, that was page 150. What's my next agenda? 182. Yeah, the masturbation. Let's see, processed food is killing us. Well, kind of, sort of. Health and nutrition, there's some interesting. Yes, calories in minus calories out. That's why you're fat. They took that one on too. I'm like, no, I'm big boned and I have a thyroid. No, it's you eat and then you fucking exercise. End of discussion. That's why you're fat. I've been saying that for years. I'm not even a fucking PhD in nutrition. Even I know that. Also talks about, you know, overthinking stuff. Like athletes, they don't overthink what they're doing. They just do it. Muscle memory. They rehearse it so much that they know what the fuck they're doing. That's in here. All right. Here we go. Randy, where are we on time? Yes. That's what I thought. Oh, you know what I'm going to say. You love... I'll consider making this a two-parter. I don't think I've... All right. Anyway. We're on page 182. Or we're going to go over. We'll see. Modern technology is the reason you're depressed. Actually, we're just going to make this a two-parter because there's a lot here. There's so much. Here we go. Thanks to the miracle of technology, you can do all your Christmas shopping. You know, should I just save this? How long do we have? Okay, that's great. Tell you what, let's hold on to that. We're just going to jump into that. Where is... Oh, it's right here in front of me. Look, I actually have my notes right in front of me. Let's do some upper middle class white girl from North America problems with Ask E. Jean from Elle Magazine. This is from the latest issue. We're going to close stating the obvious with some E. Jean questions. Then we're going to have another episode. I'm going to finish off this book. And we got to record it today, though, because I have to take the book back to the library. It's due. Yes. No. No. We'll take a break, then we're doing another episode. Deal with it. Hey, shh. Shut, woman. Hey, seen and not heard. Shush. Yes, all the feminists are drooling. All right, class conscious. Dear E. Jean, I'm a physician. Ethnic, well-traveled. She had to throw in that she's ethnic. Right, that I'm not a Caucasian. I'm ethnic. I'm a physician. Ethnic, well-traveled, and the daughter of Berkeley intellectuals. Unlike a lot of pretentious New York City types I've dated in the past, my new boyfriend is a little bit hillbilly, with a goofy sense of humor and a simple vocabulary and even simpler taste. He's Midwestern, has great values, an excellent career in finance, and I've jumped on board with the country music and the football. But our last fight happened because I was incredulous over his love of wrestling on WWE. I absolutely panicked. I can't imagine the father of my children watching WrestleMania. I know this is snobbery. He's good to me, and I wish I could be a simpler girl who doesn't love obscure references and librarian glasses. It would have made my life a lot easier in high school. What should I do? Oh. Well, honey, what you should do is let this guy go so that he can find himself a real woman. You don't like that. He's this wonderful guy with morals and values, has a great career in finance. He's made, but he likes to watch WWE, and you just can't abide by that. Oh my goodness, aren't you a fucking cunt? Aren't you a totalitarian fucking nasty little cunt? How dare he enjoy things that you don't see the merit of? How dare he? He is obviously not tolerant and diverse and tolerant like you are. He is just not as open-minded. I mean, he doesn't have Berkeley parents, and he's maybe he's not ethnic like you are. You know, if only he were more tolerant and understanding. Look, you're just going to fuck him, you're going to spout out a couple of kids, then you're going to divorce him and take half of everything he owns. It doesn't fucking matter, okay? Just use him for a fucking ATM, because that's all you're going to do. if he should be writing in for advice, and what should be said to him is get the fuck away from this bitch. Just get the fuck away from her. Dear E. Jean, a new coworker with a PhD has recently appeared in our office, and the boss favors everything she does and every word she says. In meetings, he, the boss, bows to the PhD's opinion. He always agrees with her perspectives on projects and trashes our efforts, especially mine. He's obviously starstruck, but the PhD makes things worse by emphasizing my errors in meetings. I don't know what to do. I used to love this job. Okay, first of all, it's a woman. Is it really the PhD he's in love with, or is she hot? Second of all, you kids, you've been told that college is everything, that education is everything, right? Well, hey, you're told that if you get a college education, if you get a PhD, people are going to kiss your ass. She's living the dream. She's got a PhD. She's getting her ass kicked. Kissed. I don't know, she might be getting her ass kicked, but that's in the bedroom. I don't know. Maybe she's into that freaky shit. She's getting her ass kissed. She has her PhD. She's living the dream. Don't play her hate. She's $90,000 in debt, $180,000 in debt, whatever it may be. Shut the fuck up and obey the PhD, because college education is what it's all about, right? And then, of course, she didn't know what to do because she used to love her job. Oh, how many times have I had to talk about this with women? Girls, ladies, women, females, your job is not there for you to enjoy it. It is a fucking job. If you're enjoying it, it's not a job. You don't pay people money to do things they enjoy. You have to pay people money to do things they don't enjoy. That's why it's called a job. I know you women think that Obama is your husband, you think the corporations are your boyfriends, and you think your coworkers are your friends. And you think that a job is a place you go to do things you enjoy with people you like. But it's not. A job is something you do because nobody else wants to do it, and that's why they're willing to pay you to do it. All jobs suck. Welcome to reality. I don't bother with the other side. I'm always right. Fuck you. All right, we're going to be back for a part two talking about this book, The D-Text Book.